Blog Talk Radio.
This episode of HR Happy Hour is sponsored by Acquire, a leading provider of workforce planning and analytics solutions so powerful they should wear tights and a cape. We enable and streamline organizational charting, succession planning, workforce modeling, and strategic workforce initiatives. Visit Acquire CEO Lois Melbourne's blog at blog.acquire.com for her enlightening insight into current HR industry issues by way of Star Trek, The Fonz, and Ebenezer Scrooge.
Hello world, hear the song that we're singing. Come on, get happy. A whole lot of loving is what we'll be bringing. We'll make you happy.
We have a dream, we go traveling together. Spread a little love and then we'll keep moving on. Something always happens whenever we're together. We get a happy feeling when we're singing a song.
All right, enough of that. Hey, welcome to the HR Happy Hour.
Oh, I'm sad you went to that song. I don't want to hear that one anymore.
Okay, fair enough. No more on the Get Happy song, our original theme song. No more, yeah. Shauna. Welcome to the HR Happy Hour. Okay. I am Steve Bowes, your host. With me, of course, Shauna Morkey, the HR Minion. Shauna, how are you tonight?
I'm doing good. It was almost cool here today. It was only 89 degrees.
That's not bad. That's like fall-like temperature down there. So good for you. That is great. We have a great show lined up tonight. A super guest waiting in the wings, about to come on in one second.
Yeah.
We'll introduce him in a minute. A couple of quick announcements. This is the HR Happy Hour, episode 59, about your performance review. Feel free to chime in tonight on the show. The call-in number is 646-378-1086. Press 1 if you want to come on board later on in the show. We'll definitely take some calls and questions. If you're hanging out listening to the show on Twitter tonight, of course, our hashtag is HR Happy Hour. We will keep an eye on that. If you're out there tonight on Google Wave, hanging out on Google Wave tonight, really just time to give that up and turn that off as you exit Google Wave and turn the lights out.
It's
when
you're still on Google Wave.
Yeah, someone asked me about that recently.
I haven't been on that in months.
The Google Wave, so no more of that. So great. So let's get right to it. We have a super guest tonight. We're really excited to have him join us on the HR Happy Hour. Our guest tonight is a professor at UCLA's Anderson School of Management. He's an author. He's written several books, including Beyond Bullshit, Straight Talk at Work. Love that title. And also the book and the concepts we'll be talking about mostly tonight, Get Rid of the Performance Review, How Companies Can Stop Intimidating, Start Managing, and Focus on What Really Matters. His website you can find at performancepreview.com. Please welcome to the HR Happy Hour Professor Samuel Culbert. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Steve and Shauna, glad to be here.
Great. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. We're really pleased to have you. When we heard about the book, certainly we were definitely interested in the topic, and we thought, naturally, I did anyway, that this would be a great, great topic for the HR Happy Hour. Again, for our folks out there, you know, workforce managers, HR professionals, leaders in organizations, this is, you know, it's always a hot topic, and we thought we'd make a great conversation tonight on the show. So, again, if you're out there tonight on listening, 646-378-1086, and on Twitter, HR Happy Hour. So, with Professor Culbert, let's talk a little bit, Professor, or Sam, if I may, about sort of what was behind you getting the idea to write this book, Get Rid of the Performance Review, and some of the underlying or the history of the performance review in organizations that, as you studied and researched, that you found lacking and sort of led you into the direction of writing this book.
Well, I've been talking about the stupidity of performance review for years. And I had published a book in 2008 called Beyond Bullshit. You mentioned that. and I was looking for a talking topic about what's the grossest form of bullshit taking place in corporate America.
And
that was a slam dunk when I thought about performance reviews. There's nothing more illogical or stupid that's going on. And so I thought, I wrote an article for the Wall Street Journal, and that article seemed to set the world on fire a little bit, because we got, in 1 week, we got more letters to the editor than they had ever had before for a non-newsworthy article, and because this article was newsworthy. They had more comments on their interactive blog, and people just all weighed in, and you could hear them screaming all the way from Wall Street to Wilshire Boulevard in Los Angeles.
Boy, you know, did it surprise you, the reaction to that piece in the Wall Street Journal, like how tremendous response you got to that article was?
What surprised me is anybody who ever thought about it and who's pushing it in the company hasn't thought it through, because performance reviews are bogus and fraudulent, and they're just bad management, and there's just not one positive connected to them. So they're anti-company, except managers like them.
Let's take a step back a little bit and talk about, in the book you do, you spend some time covering a bit about the origins, you know, in the organization that led us to the position of how the performance review is so entrenched in many organizations. And you talk specifically in the book about management by objectives in that theory and what that meant to performance reviews. I thought maybe you could share a little bit of your thoughts in and around how it came to be that most organizations are really wedded to the traditional performance review.
Well, right after World War II, there was a trend to modernize management. And if you could make it objective and you could find underlying fundamental principles that would give a logic to management and allow managers to talk about their effectiveness, there was a lot of, quotes, modern management approaches. The one that seemed to win out for about a couple of years was MBO, Management by Objectives. And the idea there was, you just stipulate at the beginning of the year or beginning of any time frame what you expect from an employee, and then sit back and go play golf. And at the end of the time frame, you go to the employee and say, "Did you produce what you signed on for to produce?" And of course, It took a relatively short amount of time for management to wise up and figure out that yes, employees were making all of their bogeys or many of them, but the other stuff wasn't getting done. All the essential, non-objective activities that should be taking place every day in just a logical, common sense management, they were getting shunted aside because people were just into scoring. And if it meant for a salesperson, if it meant selling so many widgets or such a volume, the salesperson abandoned his own or her own common sense and started selling stuff that may not have been most profitable to the company or may have been specials rather than standards, but they were going to make their numbers. And I say sales because that's one place where it's easy to get the imagery. But in every job, an individual brings something very special to the job, something uniquely his or her own. And those valuable qualities weren't scoring. And so enter management. But management by objectives died. It got killed off pretty quickly. But the performance reviews, they lingered on. They live on. And they're no friend to the company. They're no friends of good managers, but they're pretty good friends to bad managers because of the fear and intimidation that performance reviews create in employees. And they certainly are pretty good for the HR people.
Yeah, and I do want to circle back to that. Definitely, sort of you really spend a fair bit of time in the book talking about sort of the deficiencies as you see them in the performance review process, in particular the one-sided nature of the review process, and then subsequently the HR's role in all of this. And I do want to touch on both of those quickly before we go on. I just want to give out the phone number again: 646-378-1086. You're listening to the HR Happy Hour. Our guest tonight is Professor Samuel Culbert, author of Get Rid of the Performance Review. It's really an interesting read. I did read it. I enjoyed it, no doubt. I want to invite everyone who's listening to call in and press 1 if you want to get on board to ask a question or leave a comment on Twitter as well. HR Happy Hour is our hashtag, and we'll keep an eye on those tonight as well. A lot of folks chiming in. I see that someone on Twitter has shared the link to the professor's article from the Wall Street Journal in 2008, so I appreciate that as well. So,
well, let's nail down a couple of facts here, Steve. First of all, just to get it established for your audience, and we can talk about anything you like, but first I said performance reviews are dishonest and bogus. Now, why would I say that? One, they pretend to be the objective picture of how the company sees the employee. Well, that's all baloney. It's not objective. You get a different boss, you're going to get a different review. It pretends that reviews are will ever be just about what the employee does, when the manager's job is to make sure employees succeed. Employees that don't succeed, the manager's not doing his or her job. Okay, now, they use metrics, the same metrics, one size fits all. They use metrics to measure people. Mm-hmm. Well, they use the same metrics for salespeople and accountants. And the metrics seldom have anything to do with what the performer has in mind when he or she sets out to take action. That's not, people don't think I'm going to be a good leader. People do what they do, and then afterward, some manager scores them on leadership. Now, even the word leader doesn't mean the same thing to different people. So semantically, these are fraudulent. And, I mean, I'm talking to a manager the other day at a big company, right, and I said, I was looking at their performance review. I said, who would you score high on leadership? I mean, when you think about good leadership, who are your role models? All of a sudden, the guy's talking Abraham Lincoln, Ronald Reagan, Martin Luther King. This is crazy. He never met any of those people. So I said to him, how about around here in this company? Who would you call your stellar leader, and how come? And he says, outside of me, there are no good leaders. Well, I believe he was sincere.
Yes.
I've often felt the same way myself on the show. I have.
Hey.
Oh.
So now we have these metrics, and what do people remember from the metrics? Say somebody gets a 4.3 out of 5 on leadership. What is that person walking around saying, I'm a good leader? No, the person's thinking, what does my boss need to see me do? Not what do I need to do. What does my boss need to see me do so I can get to the 5? So whatever scores people get, they're thinking deficiency. Well, I got news for the world. All we got are deficient people. I mean, we've got, everybody's imperfect. That's the only way they got on this earth. They had to be imperfect. Everyone's biased. But what the performance reviews never do, or seldom do, is grasp the unique genius of a person who's so imperfect, he could never score on these metrics if they were judged correctly, but gets results for the company anyway. I mean, we have bosses filling out performance reviews, and they never get the guy. They never get the employee. They're just filling out forms. And what correlates with good ratings on a performance review? Well, you don't have to take my word for it. Just ask any employee. What is an employee doing working overtime to suck up to the boss? People believe that the boss's liking for them is what they need to do to get a good performance review.
Right.
Well, that's great. I believe that also, because the metrics make no damn sense. So how are people going to get a good performance review? Get the boss to like you, you can get good scores on any metric they put in front of the person.
Right. So you spend a lot of time in the book talking about sort of the behaviors that the performance review motivates, right, is really just sucking up to the boss, getting the boss to like you, trying to manage to that, you know, try to behave and conduct yourself to that expectation of the boss. Are you being a little unfair to sort of paint, you know, almost all bosses with that sort of broad brush?
I say that in the book, and I don't say that now. The performance review is good for the bad bosses, and it's bad for good bosses. See, there are a lot of good bosses. A lot of people really take this management stuff seriously. Look, if I said something different, I'd be betraying my own cause. I spend most of my time teaching MBA students. I hate to think that all the students I've taught go out and be bad managers. But because of the performance review, it's very hard for the good guys to get an honest, authentic, candid conversation, particularly about what the company's doing wrong. Performance reviews cause employees to distort everything they see and what they say. Two books before this, I wrote a book called Don't Kill the Bosses, and that book talked about the stupidity of one-sided, of boss-dominated relationships. And we can talk about that a little bit later.
Yeah, I'd love to talk about that, because that's a theme in the book, certainly in the latest book as well, right? The idea that the relationship between the boss and the employee, not only is it sort of hierarchical based on the organizational structure, but you make a strong argument that by bringing that hierarchy into the interpersonal relationship, it's very damaging. And yeah, you can certainly maybe expound on that a little bit.
In the early 1980s, oh my God, I'm going to give away my age here. This is terrible. I published a book talking about trusting in relationships. And in that book, I alleged with my co-author, Jack McDonough, that the most wonderful tool any manager potentially has at his or her disposal is a trusting relationship. There's no substitute for it. There's no more valuable organization commodity. Well, how do you get trust when you got performance reviews? When you have one person, the boss, holding the employee open-endedly accountable for any issue the boss wants to pull up on the flagpole, and the other person is guilty and cannot, and if he talks too much, she talks too much in defending, all that person is defensive. They're not taking good critical feedback. So it's... No, in that book, I said the protocol's all off. Bosses are accountable, too. In fact, the boss is accountable for the employee's performance. But then, another thing that is just stupid and fraudulent about performance reviews, now, before we even have the review, the boss gets a budget. Usually it's a money budget. But correlating with that is how many excellence she or he can give, how many average, and there's the expectation that somebody is going to be held insufficient and needs improvement and could lose their job if they don't improve. Well,
that's
boss's job is to make everybody successful. So what do we have? We got 20% excellent, 70% some form of average, and 10% needs improvement. I got to tell you, Steve, I never liked anybody calling me average. I don't think of myself as average. You got a review system that causes the majority of people to be called average. How is that good for the company? How does that create trusting relationships with the boss? And when pinned down, bosses, I'm not saying you or anybody in particular, but there's a real tendency for bosses to get mealy-mouthed about it and say, look, I don't really think you're average, but there are only so many excellence I could give.
Right.
And HR would find me suspect if I gave everybody, so I have to give some people, and I could have given you a 3, but I gave you a 4.
Right. Yeah. I'd love to get into a little bit the role of the HR organization and all of this as you see it as well. Before that, I just want to, Shauna, do you have any comments out there we see on the internet on Twitter tonight that we might want to respond to? Just please let us know. A really lively debate going on amongst
it
many
really
of the listeners
is.
Tonight.
It's awesome. You guys have to call in. Call in and speak up. Come on. This
we do have a few folks on the line. We'll take some calls in a few minutes. Our call-in number again, 646-378-1086, with Professor Samuel Culbert, author of Get Rid of the Performance Review, professor at UCLA, and on Twitter, HR Happy Hour is our hashtag, of course. So let's Professor, I'd like to talk a little bit about the role of HR in all this. Just so you know, most of our listeners to the show are in the HR function in some capacity or another as consultants or professionals, directors of HR in their organization. So, why is the performance review culture in your view seemingly perpetuated by many HR departments?
Well, look, to start with, most people don't know what they're doing with these performance reviews, but I'm pretty critical of people just going into cruise control and not thinking it through for themselves, because of all the disciplines in a company, HR is best positioned to see the havoc wrecked by performance reviews. They see the dispirited employees. They see the managers who are frustrated that they're having to say negative things because the company doesn't trust them on a daily basis, so they create the ceremony that on once a year or twice a year, you're going to have to say some critical things to people. So HR should know better, but I don't think that most HR people think it through. In my book, I call it a power grab. Because HR gets a seat at the big table because of performance reviews. They're in there. They get managers to outsource management to them. They're in there helping give the feedback. And of course, you wouldn't want to have a discussion without them in the room. They're the experts on personal development.
Right.
But it's not clear to me that anybody is the expert on personal development inside the company, because the individual, him or herself, is the expert on him or herself, on personal development. And they've got a life to feed into their developmental needs. They're not just thinking, what do I need to do at work? They're thinking, how do I live my life effectively, and work is a big part of it. And I personally believe that things that affect people emotionally at work, they go right home with the person. But the performance review is such a negative influence. Now, so far, we're talking about performance reviews. That's not what I wrote the book about.
Right.
I wrote the book about the non-thinkingness of today's managers, HR, to be sure, on this issue, but I'm also writing it about, let's look at what human nature actually is, and what if we were managing to get the best out of people rather than to scare the hell out of people, how would it look? Now,
all right, before we sort of morph into, there's a couple things I want to do. We have several folks who want to get on board and ask a question or make a comment. I promise I'll get to calls in a minute. And I know we've had some questions online about make sure that we ask the professor about, you know, what's the alternative. We've bashed performance reviews for about 20 minutes, and, you know, people want to hear what the, you know, what the alternative is. And we definitely want to talk about that. But I do want to just throw out one more question for the professor in and around the entrenched sort of performance review mindset in many organizations, and that is specifically the idea of pay for performance that lots of managers and leaders of organizations talk about. We want to link demonstrated performance and measurable performance to compensation treatment. And I know in the book, Professor, I've read the book, so I know kind of your take on it a little bit, but I thought maybe you'd share some of your thoughts about this. You know, if you get rid of the performance review, then how do you do pay for performance?
I don't think that I don't think we're living in a meritocracy. I don't think that if you paid me more, I could work more effectively. I don't think that I think that if you overpay me, you're likely to fire me. I think that by and large, to the greatest extent, that the market sets the pay for people, and there's some, you know, there's some posturing and there's some threatening and there's some negotiation. That's all. That's what happens. I think people should be left to negotiate their pay. They can get more. Let them get more. But when you start using how well you did on the job as seen by a biased individual, and it's not even how seen by the biased individual. The boss doesn't determine what the bonus is or what the pay augmentation is. The boss's boss does. And the boss and the boss sits in the closed meeting, and the big boss comes in and says, look, this is the augmentation for your group. How do you want to spread it around? And they're not talking about who did the best job. They're talking about who has to have more money this time so that that person doesn't leave.
Right.
Because these guys, nobody wants to lose employees due to pay. And so if there's going to be a stare down and a discussion about pay, just keep it separate. Don't start talking performance. Go on the assumption that performance equates to results. And it's not just the employee's job to get results for the company. That's
right.
What the boss is supposed to be paid for. It's not to sit back and evaluate. The boss is supposed to be the facilitator. What I like in bosses are bosses who walk up to employees and say, how are things going? What can I do to help you? And to have an honest conversation. You're having performance reviews. Go tell your boss what he can do to help you, what resources you lack. Tell the boss where you're supposed to be able to do this, but you're a little confused or something's going on at home and you can't. Whatever it is, go tell him what your insufficiencies are. That'd be suicide, given that we have performance reviews. So you can't even have an honest conversation about how the company can get the results. So what I'm for, and I'm saying, I think this is all more bogus, pretentious commentary from the company, thinking that if they pretend to pay people more based on their performance as evaluated by another imperfect human being, that they can get them to perform better. You get people to perform better when they trust you, and you give them and you stage for them to be good performers, which is the boss's job. So that's how you help people. You ask people, What do you need? So you can perform. You create a setting where people can talk openly and honestly about what's really going on, not what they have to say in order to get higher grades on the performance review. So
okay,
the whole
so
thing is, it's all Looney Tunes to me.
Yeah.
And
all right. Let me stop you right there because a couple things. We're right on the halfway mark of the show. And so here's what I want to do.
Wow.
We've got several folks who want to get on board and ask a question, make a comment. So I want to take a couple of phone calls. Then I want to circle back around to sort of the alternative, right? The performance in the book, you talk about the performance preview. Your website is performancepreview.com that people can check out as well. So I definitely want to talk about, you know, what are the alternatives for managers and for organizations. So let's take a couple of calls, and I'm going to take these in, I think, reverse order that they popped
Ooh.
Onto the switchboard to switch it up a little bit. And I'm going to go to line number six. Area code 920, you're on the HR Happy Hour.
Hi, guys. It's Matt.
Hi, Matt.
Hey.
How are you?
Doing well. I have a question for Dr. Colbert. I'm curious how he goes about evaluating his own students in the classroom. What does he do in carrying out if performance reviews are bogus? What does he do to differentiate his students?
Well, thanks for your friendly question, Matt.
Good morning.
Matt's a good guy, professor himself, so thank you, Matt, for the question.
We do love Matt.
I'd like to split this up. We're talking in the classroom, I hope, about skill acquisition. It's just like taking a driver's training test. There's certain, you test the students to see if you believe they've mastered the content. Is that testing objective? No. But we're testing to skills and knowledge acquired. We're not talking about performance. I'm not evaluating the student on how he or she goes about studying, their effectiveness in dealing with other classmates. I'm talking about if on an exam, what they did on the exam, according to mimicking what's in the book or internalizing the principles and being able to apply the principles to a case. But that's what we're talking about. We're not talking about their intelligence level. Intelligent people can get bad scores on the test. That's okay. We're not talking about what they need to do to develop. I'm not. Yes, I will hold. Occasionally, I'll try to create a question to see if the student did the reading, but and an attempt to hold them accountable. But when I find out the student didn't do the reading, then it's shame on me because I only assigned my books.
I like that move. So you assign your own reading, your own books? That's nice. Yeah.
Very nice.
Handy.
Who do I trust more than me?
Right, right.
Mother Teresa.
Nice.
All right. Matt, hang in there with us. I hope that answered your question.
Yep.
Hang out with us. Thanks so much, Matt. Professor, how about another call? Is that okay?
I'm having fun.
Beautiful.
That's the point.
Line number five, area code 649.
Hey, it's Mike. Yeah, from Sonar 6.
Hey, Mike, how are you?
I'm pretty good, actually. So, look, I love the whole thing because I just love the provocation of it. Yeah, we love being provocative, and yeah, I just see that Samuel's been very provocative in the whole thing. I guess that the question that I have, and I think lots of people here at Sonar 6 have this, is that, hey, when I became a manager, I was terrible at being a manager. And the kind of assumption here is that hey, people are kind of actually better at being managers. You know, they're kind of naturally good at being managers. And really, really, most people are pretty poor at being managers. And one of the few tools that HR have to make better managers or at least provide some guidelines and so on is the kind of performance review. So aren't we better off if we're trying to fix this fundamental issue of people doing a bad job of managing people, aren't we better off to start with a tool which we already have, like the performance reviews, and just try and fix that rather than kind of dump it and replace it with some kind of new approach to managing people?
Well, why don't we just use left-handed monkey wrenches? I mean, you got a tool that's bogus. It doesn't do anything it purports to do. But I do have an alternative called the performance review.
Let's talk about it now because people are dying to know. You know, who haven't read the book. You know what the alternative is to the performance review, and let's talk about that now.
It's three parts. First, just think it through. You got to get rid of the fear and intimidation. You got to create a setting where people can start talking openly and honestly about what they're doing. Isn't that what good management might be involved? That I trust my boss enough to talk to him or her candidly so I can get the help. So let's get rid of the fear and intimidation. How do you do that? Well, the starting point is get rid of the performance review. As long as you have this performance review, you've got fear and intimidation taking place. Second, you got to change the politics. The performance review pits management against employee. No, change the politics. Tell the boss, your job is to do the boss job. Make sure that your people succeed. And you know what we're going to do in order to celebrate that? We're going to hold you co-jointly responsible for the output of the employee. We're going to give the manager an honest-to-goodness reason for getting involved with the employee and creating the kind of conversation where the manager will, before the bus goes off the road, know about what difficulties are taking place. And if the manager is not giving performance reviews, and if the manager is going to get evaluated on the results the employee brings in, that manager is going to find a way to start using his or her savoir faire. They may be bad managers, but that doesn't make a person a bad person. This is a human experience. It's what everybody talks about, whether you're talking about a marriage or a baseball team or any group of people who are on the field together. So what do we need to do? We got to get the boss finding out about the employee and how he or she sees the world. We've got to have the boss stop talking about themselves as super people and just another human being. And the problems I've had with employees who have an attitude toward authority, because all of a sudden we're talking about not just the employee with the attitude toward authority, another imperfection, but that's what you got. You got to make it with that person. No, you're talking about the problems that the boss has with people who have attitudes toward authority. Let the boss tell the employee about how she hated her older sister and being pushed around by her. You know, we're talking about, let's find out about one another. So what I'm saying is change the politics, get rid of performance, change the politics, hold the boss accountable for the results of their operatives, and then start to, now let's have HR. Now let's start creating friendly settings where you don't shoot yourself in the foot by talking openly and honestly about your imperfection, because it's your imperfections that are stopping the company from getting the results it needs, and start evaluating people on their abilities to work together well and bring in results for the company. That's what the company thinks they're trying to get.
Right. I mean, you talk a lot in the book about how the performance preview model is really one of the benefits of it is putting both the boss's skin in the game as well as the employee, right? Yes. That they're both responsible for the results of the teamwork or the partnership or however you want to term it, right?
Steve, did you have a difficult time reading the book?
I did not. I managed to get through it okay.
Too big for you, Steve.
Did you find it easy reading? Did you find it a good read? Did you find it infotaining?
It was. I did find it entertaining. Absolutely.
Infotaining.
It was entertaining. It was. I enjoyed it.
I think that this book, I love this book. I've published 6 other books. I love this book because I had, as a writing partner on this book, my editor at the Wall Street Journal.
Okay.
And first of all, he's got the same quirky sense of humor I do. He is the most gifted writer I've ever encountered.
Right.
So I think this book is a sensational read.
Yeah, and I tell you what, he must have loved the book too, your co-author, right? I imagine, right? He loved it.
If you have the book in front of you,
open it.
I sure do. I have it right here. Yeah.
Look at the dedication.
Yes. It is dedicated to Larry Rout, brilliant writer, gifted editor, sensitive being, lovely friend. That is right on the dedication page.
Well, this book, I'm not even taking that much credit for it. I just say we wrote one heck of a book, and it's clear, and I think your audience ought to know that. That's what
I tell you. No, I do. I really enjoyed the book. I said that. And I do recommend it absolutely. We have a powerful audience, Professor. People get out there and they vote with their wallets on the HR Happy Hour. I imagine
we sell a lot of books on the show.
Yeah, they have
product.
The advantage right now. They're drinking the martinis. I'm sitting here with a Coke.
It's happy hour. Come on.
Knowing our audience, there's probably not a lot of Coke drinking going on right now. So. Hey, let's quickly, we've got a couple more folks hanging out on the line. We'll get to your calls, I promise, in a minute. We're with Professor Samuel Culbert talking about getting rid of the performance review. Our calling number is 646-378-1086. On Twitter, our hashtag is HRHappyHour. This has definitely been a fun show, entertaining show so far. Let's try to grab another call. Line number 4, area code 513. You're on the HR Happy Hour.
Hey, Steve. It's Steve Brown.
Hey, Steve. Hey. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Very good. Thank you.
Good. Love the subject. Think it's great. Been the person who's made performance reviews and also eliminated them. My question to the doctor is this. Why does every example seem so punitive? Don't you find organizations that aren't doing this? Because it sounds, and I'm going to be harsh here, it sounds a little generational.
Well,
hey, Theory X is wrong. Let's not do Theory X. No kidding. I mean, there are companies who are doing things that are good, that are developing people, that are developing honesty, that are addressing the politics. It seems a little generalized to me.
Well, what am I going to do, write about one company? there are many companies that got rid of performance reviews. In fact, there's a wonderful book by Cones and Jenkins. It's a Barrett Kohler 2001 book. I cited my book where they do a study of 27 organizations, some commercial, some public sector that got rid of performance reviews and talk about what's analytically, in detail, with quantifiable results, talk about what was gained by getting rid of performance.
Sure.
There was a follow-up study done 5 years later where they went back to the same companies and they found only a handful had gotten rid of had started with performance reviews, and in each of those all those instances of getting rid of the riddance, it was about a CEO coming in from another company where she instituted performance reviews, or it was about a company merger where a big company took the smaller organization and they instituted the mainstream way that they were using. But to get a little bit back to your question, this is mainstream still. It's ridiculous. It's mainstream. A lot of people would like to talk about good performance reviews. I mean, amongst the letters that we got people talking about, well, It's just that that it's a poorly trained manager giving a performance review. That's what makes it a bad performance review. No, that's not what makes it a bad performance review. It's a dishonest process. Just think it through yourself. And that's what we spend about half the book on, systematically deconstructing every bogus argument ever been created to justify that performance reviews are valid. There is no justification. So when you say, am I being one-sided in slamming all performance reviews? You're darn right I am.
No, I was saying you're slamming bosses and employees.
Bosses are
bad. They're going to be punitive. They're going to punish. They're only going to grab people as average or only make it more. I think it's just a little overgeneralized.
No, what are you talking about? Is if you have a curve, that's the system. It's not about all bosses are bad. Performance reviews make it tougher for good bosses to be good.
I agree with that.
But this is the beginning of the program. We were talking about students. I'm a professional trying to help people become good managers. I'm not slamming all my... and also, I work with superior managers.
Great.
And I tell lots of stories in this book and other books about superior managers. But performance reviews are organizationally created obstacles to people being their best. It's a protocol that never does what it says it's going to do. And it makes it tougher for good managers to be good managers.
Yeah, I think right. I think there's sort of, Steve, I think you sort of allude to an interesting point. The question is, you know, whether or not that is the process and the design of the performance review as it's typically implemented in most organizations, is it so flawed that it even sort of sucks good managers and sours what could be good relationships between bosses and employees, you know, down the wormhole, if you will, right? Is it so poison that you just can't overcome it?
Well, look, we go into a great incidentally, yes to that, Steve. That's what I believe. Let's just be clear. The performance review makes it tough for the good guys to be good, and it makes it, and it's a systematically, puts obstacles in front of people who want to do their best, who want to be at their best, and it systematically distorts communication.
Yeah. Steve, hang on with this. I hope we sort of addressed that question.
It's great.
Thank you for the call and hang out with us. We have one more caller who wants to get on board. I want to take that last call right now. Line number 3, country code 44, you're on the HR Happy Hour.
Hi, Steve. Hi, everybody. I've just got a very quick question, because listening to the show, it sounds to me that the issue is with the matrix being used and poor bosses rather than a review process. And I just wondered what the professor thought about that, whether it is really matrix and poor delivery that's the issue and not having a performance review itself.
Well, look, what I'm for is performance previews, talking just what most people, common sense would take them to, what's good management? People talking with people, working together to get results, talking in a timely fashion when the results aren't quite in, and talking about what additional resources do we need? Where are we vulnerable, and how should we be bolstering this? And what can you do to help me? That's what's good.
But would you not be doing that anyway, as a manager? You don't need a. A good manager will have those conversations outside the performance review anyway.
Going to get an honest response back. A good manager is going to get the good manager's favorite response back, as seen by the employee. Look, employees are blowing smoke in their boss's eyes all the time. I'm not saying they often find themselves in situations where I'm not going to tell this because the boss might take it the wrong way. I want people working on results of the company, not working to please their bosses. And again, what you said is, what you said back to me is what I think I said on the front end. That is good management. You don't have to even get an MBA to know that's good management. It's also good parenting. It's also good loving to your living partner, talking while it's happening, not talking after the fact and pointing fingers and blaming. And if it's a boss, we're always going to be blaming the victim. The victim.
But at the moment, all we seem to be doing is blaming the boss. This is all I'm hearing on the show, to be honest.
Agreed.
Well, then you're not. I fell down someplace then.
Yeah. Well, I think.
Sorry about that. I never communicate that.
Yeah, I do think some of it is sort of the system that sort of puts the boss into the position to administer these reviews in the manner that they're designed, right? I do think that's certainly a part of it.
And I'd say if there was a good boss, thanks, Steve, and I'd say if there's a good boss, the boss should be getting it, getting how the system is putting up roadblocks to building the kind of authentic, timely interaction that she or he needs with employees.
Right, because that's, I mean, everyone seems to talk about that, right? That feedback needs to be more regular, more informal, you know.
What do you mean by feedback? Feedback has to be two ways. It
right.
isn't about where I'm imperfect. The feedback has to be, given that I'm imperfect, here's how you can help me. And
right.
we get rid of the pretense that we're all... That anybody measures up to the set of metrics that they put in front of you. Now, Deming said a long time ago, and a boy is he right. He said, "You know who?" He said, "The most dangerous people to the system are the guys that are getting good performance reviews because they're not thinking about how to improve the system. They're thinking about why change the system. Getting on all right, thank you very much. But what we want are people looking at the system and critiquing it in terms of its applicability to the specific situation that they're in, the challenges that are in front of them. Nobody gets textbook cases. Nobody gets perfect people. What we've got are people needing to work effectively and get results.
Burn those on his mind.
Okay, let's do a quick pause. Professor, hang on with us for a couple more minutes. We're nearing the end of the show. Shauna, I don't know, you know, I don't know where to go from here, but it's been very interesting. It's been a great show. I think the professor's been fantastic tonight.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Let's quick reset. HR Happy Hour with our guest is Professor Sam Culbert, author of Get Rid of the Performance Review, How Companies Can Stop Intimidating and Start Managing and Focus on What Really Matters. You can find it anywhere on Amazon and everywhere else where fine books are sold. And it's an interesting read. And as the professor called me out on, you know, it's infotainment for sure. And I think you'll enjoy it if you pick it up. So let's just some closing final thoughts. Just wrap up a couple of little questions we've had from some of the folks hanging out online tonight. One professor is, what about bad performance? What if truly you've got an issue with an employee, you know, the manager and or the HR department is working towards, you know, perhaps a disciplinary action, a termination? Does the performance review, the formal one, is that a requirement? Is that why organizations like to keep it around so they can justify this kind of action?
If you've got somebody who isn't pulling his or her weight, you document with or without performance reviews. You document and you get rid of that person if you can, or find better chemistry for them, transfer them. But you have to do that in any event. But he isn't up to the job that they took, or the assignment the way that everything kind of warped and changed and evolved. But so you have to do that. But you don't give everybody a performance review. You get rid of people that you want to document. And frankly, I've been a expert witness in at least 24 wrongful termination suits, both serving for the plaintiff and the defendant company. And no attorney is crazy enough to bring a performance review with all of its flaws into one of those trials, or even to enter into the deposition. They don't do that. That's all HR pretense. HR sells and defends it on the grounds that we have to have a file. Well, what's the file we're doing? We're keeping awful stuff about everybody. I mean, like the KGB. No, you don't want to do that. You want people.
Oh my God.
That's part of what they get from this. They get upper management. Everybody thinks HR has heard something about him or her and got the goods on him, so they all treat HR with a lot of respect. And you know what? Sometimes it's deserved, but it's not because they're keeping the book on everybody's dirty little secrets.
Yeah, right. I think the... you know, it's interesting, right? Because, in fact, Steve, if you're still on the line, I think you even mentioned today to me that on the website that sometimes even that can come back to haunt the HR or the organization, right? Because a savvy lawyer will find the one or two good things that were written about the employee in the performance review.
That's what they talk about in the courtroom.
Yeah.
Agreed.
And everybody's
true.
Good because it's not objective. It's right. What people should say. And they should start talking in I speak. And I speak, I have a big section on that in my book, Beyond Bullshit. Straight talk at work.
Right.
You own it. Leave the other person's voice. If you talk about, here's how I see it, this is what I believe, this is my experience, shut the other person out. It's when people start talking in the language, the we, and talking as if they're objective. Nobody is objective. And if there's some things you can count, that's objective. But the minute you start talking about the value that you've just counted, you're into subjective heaven again. So let's stop pretending that any feedback about another individual who you don't even know very well and that person has had to hide from you is objective. It's not objective. We're talking about a practical situation. Two human beings getting together to get results. They got a task. That's what they're getting paid for. They're not getting paid to run a personality contest.
Professor, I have to stop you there. Thank you so much. We're right up to the wire here, so we do need to sort of wrap up and get out from under this before the top of the hour. Shauna, if you want to open up the lines for a little after 9 o'clock talk, that's great on the show. I do want to say a couple things, Professor Culbert. I do want to thank you so much for taking the time to come on the show tonight. It's been a great conversation, really fun,
interesting.
Well, I hope that I didn't sound excitable about
it. Yeah, no, you're fine. You were one of our sort of more mellow guests we've had lately, but that's great. We need to tone it down a little bit.
Barely drag you out of your shell.
Yeah.
I want people to start thinking about it. And
what do you mean next time?
They'll start thinking.
So again, the book is Get Rid of the Performance Review. The website is performancepreview.com. Check out Professor Culbert there. And thank you so much, Professor Culbert, for coming on the show. I do want to thank the folks who called in, the listeners. Coming up in the next few weeks, we've got some really interesting stuff. Next week, Jason Seiden is hosting the show. Guest hosting. I won't be around, so you can make fun of me and give me my review next week because I won't be here. So that's next week. And then we'll September 2nd, Bill Kudyk, the HR Tech Preview. September 9th, Allison Green and Ask a Manager. So really good stuff coming up. Thank you so much, everybody. Thank you, Professor Culbert, one more time. Thanks for the listeners, callers, everybody, and good night from the HR Happy Hour.
Thank you for listening to this episode of HR Happy Hour, sponsored by Acquire, a leading provider of workforce planning and analytics solutions and enthusiastic proponent of free stuff. Go to aquire.com/downloads for free software trials, free webinars, free podcasts, free case studies, and more. Did we mention it's all free? Acquire.com/downloads. Who doesn't like freebies?
Whoever is listening to the show live while they're on their phone, you guys got to turn it off.
Yeah, whoever's got the computer on needs to turn it off right now. It was on the
phone.
Yeah,
there's feedback, guys. Thank you. It wouldn't be our show without technical difficulties.
Wow.
It was probably the professor.
Good show tonight, everyone. Thank you, everybody.
Yep, that was fun.
Good job, guys. If I can evaluate.
Can we do the performance review now?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah.
What do you got?
We'll give out the scores.
This was the first time I've ever been equated with the KGB. I've been called the Gestapo.
Is that John?
It is John.
Hey, John.
How are you?
We're great. That was a fun show. The professor, I don't know if the professor is still with us. Are you there, professor?
Well, I think he might have dropped off.
Okay,
he failed.
Fine. He was great, though. It was hard to rein him in at times, but God bless him. Good sport tonight. So it was fun.
Mm-hmm.
Good show, Steve. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for everybody for calling in and listening tonight. It was a good time.
Yeah, it was one of the better shows yet, whether I agreed with him or not.
Yeah,
those are the best kind of shows when you don't necessarily agree.
I had a fairly, not that you could tell from listening, I had a reasonably tight set of questions prepared and that I had sent to him. And I don't know if it was the first or second question, he kind of just went off and gave a speech, sort of, and answered some of the questions that were meant to come up later. And so it was difficult to kind of rein it in a bit at times, but still, I not coming off like a suck up. I read the book. I like the book. I think there's a lot in there that makes a lot of sense. Now, whether or not, I think it goes a little bit too far at times where, and Bill, you sort of hinted at this as well, like every boss is a jerk and, has it in for the employee and is only looking out for themselves. But, I know that I don't believe that. But still, there's a lot of good points in the book about how the process can be sort of dysfunctional. So, it's an interesting read anyway.
I'll definitely be buying it.
Yeah, it's a good read. So
we sold one book.
Yeah, there you go. We've got the power. So.
I should think you've sold quite a few.
Yeah, we're working it. I want to get we're gonna do another show with like an obscure kind of thing, right, Shauna? Like remember when we did the indie culture show?
That was an awesome show.
She's got another book in the works, and I still correspond with her occasionally, Kaya Oakley.
Good.
And
has a crush.
Yeah. Oh, she's very cool. But when her next book comes out, I told her we'd have her back on, and that'll be a different, that'll be a little departure for us if indeed she gets that book out, because it's not about any of our subject matter at all.
You guys ought to look at getting Bob Sutton on when he releases Good Boss, Bad Boss.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's a good idea. That's a good idea.
I loved his last book.
Authors are good because they definitely, they sort of know the answers, to the questions pretty much. They spend
I would hope
a year.
So.
Yeah, they spend a year or two researching and writing a book, so when you ask them a question about the content of the book, they pretty much have the answer down, which is nice.
When's Sidon's next book due?
I really don't know. Maybe you can Shauna, you can ask him next week.
Oh yeah, I totally want another one of his books. I like the first two so much, and now I have signed copies.
Yeah, agreed.
There you go. No, his stuff's great. I love his books. So I gave away my copies, so I don't even have them anymore.
Why would you give them away?
I gave them to students, I think, as I'm thinking about.
Oh,
them.
Well, okay, I see that. I can see that.
I'm spreading the knowledge, right? So.
Yeah, I keep those two books on my desk all the time.
So, Bill, HR Florida, when are you coming in?
Well, I've got to come over for Telling That Live, TNL, so I'll be over on the 26th for the 27th, then flying over to Florida on the Sunday.
Great.
From Dallas to Florida, so I'll be seeing you then.
Yeah, awesome. Cool. Make sure you ping us, and I'm coming in on Saturday, actually, so I'll be there.
And I'll hope to jump on your live show when you have it.
We are doing, I didn't even get a chance to tell Sean, we're doing two shows from HR Florida.
You have told me that you're doing shows. What time do you need me? Just let me know.
They're going to be at 1 o'clock Eastern time, afternoon, both of them.
But did you get Winkler? This is the question.
Did I get who? Winkler looks like a no. I heard today, as a matter of fact, that Winkler has to leave like right after his scheduled appearance is over. So I'm thinking no on Winkler, but I didn't announce this yet, but I'll announce it here. The Monday show, we're getting Tin Cup, who's never been on the show before.
So cool.
And,
and the second show is going to be Kathy Martin. I'm not sure if you guys know her.
Yay!
Yeah, Kathy Martin is going to be on the second show. She's presenting at HR Florida about engagement and culture, and so she's going to be our guest on the second show at HR Florida.
I like her comic strip.
Yeah, Kathy, right. Kathy the one with no nose? Is she that one? I can't remember. But so two good shows from HR Florida. It'll be good.
That's good. I look forward to seeing you then. I'll speak to you all soon.
All right, guys. Well, that's it.
Thanks
right,
for the show, Steve. Good
words?
Show.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for calling in. Any final thoughts, and we'll wrap it up tonight? All right. Well, great. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks,
John,
everyone.
Thank you. We will see you all next week for Side and Says. Thanks, and good night from the HR Happy Hour.
Night, guys.